Hello, welcome to episode 262 of the Applog Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. I'd like to thank everybody for shopping on Amazon and supporting the show. You too can do that now that you're in self-isolation. Go to applog.ca/Amazon or applog.ca/US Amazon. Bookmark the links, and every time you shop on Amazon, use those links and shop, and you will be supporting the show, and it costs you no extra money. You can also help me out by supporting me on Patreon. You go to patreon.com/applog. You can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with my hosting and gas fees, and you can cancel at any time. What can I say? The music industry is shut down because of this COVID-19, this pandemic that is stopping the world from moving. And I feel for all you brothers out there, as brothers and sisters who are making music and trying to make a living as a musician. And unfortunately, the people who are suffering the most are the musicians, the technicians, anybody who works in this industry, because there's nothing, you can't even meet up with more than five people right now. It's tough. It's very tough. And I don't know what we're going to do about this, because it's, you know, where I work, we're shut down until last day of April. And I don't know what to say. I do know that we're going to get through it, but at what cost? How many people are going to lose their houses, their apartments, their lives based on this thing? And all I can say is stay inside and wash your hands. That's all I can say. That's all we can say. It's really, really, it's a drag, but I don't know what to say. I don't know what more to say about this, but I hope anybody who is listening, who plays in a band, any way I can help, please let me know. I record things. I do live streams. I can help you out if you're in this area of the Toronto area and you need help setting up some software so you can stream out to your friends and family and fans. Call me. Get in touch with me. applog.ca/contact. I will be more than willing to help. That's my part. I'm also trying to raise money for this Ride to Conquer Cancer that I'm doing in June, but it looks like I don't know what's going to go on with that. I really don't know. It's in June. I'm trying to raise money for cancer research by riding 220 plus kilometers from Toronto to Niagara Falls on a bicycle, by the way. And, you know, I'll put how you can donate. I'll put the description in the description. I'll put the description in the description, and you can help me out by, you know, supporting that. I understand if you're broke, because, you know, a lot of people are. So today on the show, I have Shane Elward and Dylan Murley. Shane is the vocalist guitarist. Dylan is the bass and also sings. The High Sides of a new album out, which came out actually a little while ago, called Some Pretty Dark Thoughts. It is self-released. Any way of purchasing this album will be put in the description of this podcast. So go buy their music, because I've just got off text with Shane, and it looks like they have to cancel their whole May tour, which is not good. And like I said before, we got to support our music, we've got to support our art, and we got to support our brothers. So here they are, Shane and Dylan from the High Sides on the Applog Podcast. Good to meet you guys. Welcome to the show, Rock and Roll Show.
Thanks.
High Sides, how many records you guys put out so far?
So we've got a full length that just came out called Some Pretty Dark Thoughts. I came out on February 14th. And before that, in 2018, released an EP called Put It Out There.
Yeah, it's on Spotify. I heard it on Spotify today.
Cool.
It's a big difference. I mean, the production quality from the new one to last time, it took a big step up.
Yeah, I think the first one was, well, the big part of it was the first one was like just me doing it by myself. So it was kind of before the band actually formed. And I just did it out of like my sister's basement. I just got back from traveling and I'd written some songs. And then I was getting a good response out of it. So I came back to Vancouver and then hooked up with these guys. And then we kind of locked ourselves away and we started practicing and rewriting that first EP. But then in comparison to this one, we've now been playing together for a while and then also writing this record together and then going to Rain City to do it. Just, I think the collection of having three minds instead of one and doing it in like obviously a big studio with a producer helped a lot as well.
Yeah, having a band to bounce ideas off is a huge asset. I mean, I did the same thing. I would try to put my own records out, and it's always like you either get lost or you get self-indulged, and it's neither of those is good for some reason.
Right. Yeah, I think that was exciting because to have like a fresh set of ears on it, right? Because like when you're recording it yourself, it's like you never good enough. But when you have someone else to be like, "Hey, we're moving on,"
Yeah.
and you're like, "That's probably a good thing."
Absolutely. Having good ideas, like having an idea to make it better too, is obviously there's more perspective with other people to put their ideas forth. And so it sounds like you guys are a democracy. That's why you're three piece. So you can have like
Yeah, we like to vote on shit. I don't know if it always works, but.
Well, we usually go by majority vote. So anytime there's an idea put forward, majority rules. Most of the time, all three of us are down with it. But there's been a few times, I mean, I've been outvoted on certain things. I think there's always been at least one instance where one of us has been outvoted on certain ideas that we bring forward.
And I'll just cry until
Totally
I
gets
get
his
my
way.
way, and then.
But the cool thing about this record, the new record, Some Pretty Dark Thoughts, is like everything that we record, everything that's on there, we didn't keep it unless all of us wanted it on there.
Yeah, it was a good collective of putting our heads together and putting out what hopefully we think at least is like the best that we can do at this point. Or it's definitely, like you said, a leap forward compared to what I was doing before.
Yeah, did it take you 2 years to do, or did it take you a long time to record? What took longer?
The whole process was about a year. Like I started writing the skeletons for Some Pretty Dark Thoughts almost exactly a year ago. And then we got together, started rewriting them, making them full songs, changing them, and then we were ready to go into the studio in August.
End of August last year is when we started going in for our studio sessions.
And then we did pre-pro in August, and then started at the beginning of September. We were in Rain City for 10 days, and then that was it. And then I got mixed and mastered, and voila, here it is.
Well, pre-production
Or
is important, right? Pre-production, getting to be able to record it once and get all the ideas out and then go into the studio after. Pre-production is a huge thing. A lot of people don't do that anymore. They just think, because they have their own shit, they can just record it at their home and then put it out and that's good enough. But no, you guys do it the right way.
right. Yeah, it was cool. I kind of always avoided it too, but this time, yeah, we did pre-production in our jam spot. So we had already pre-recorded all of the songs ourselves. Then we went into Rain City and did a live off the floor pre-production. And then we did the record.
Oh,
So we actually
wow.
did two pre-productions before. Yeah, which I think was like a huge help, especially in just like time mapping and stuff like that for the songs was like,
Yeah, that and getting our song structure down to where we wanted it and to where a place where the producer was like, okay, this is where I think the songs should sit for now, and then when we go into sessions, we can play around with it a bit more. It definitely made everything more concise, but still allowed a lot of freedom for us to play around.
That's
Yeah,
amazing.
there were a lot of like more subtle timing changes than I would have ever imagined. Like you can't even tell, but like there's just like those kind of decisions on the live off the floor where like, oh, you naturally speed up here and slow down here. We kind of used that in like changing the tempo maps just to make the song feel, I guess, the way that we would normally play it. Yeah.
Well, it sounds great. I commend you guys. You can tell that there's time and effort spent on it, and it's interesting because a lot of people do have their own studios and they have their own setup. Like I got one here. Everybody's got one. Everybody's got a laptop. It's really easy to make a record in your home or at your house. That's just okay, you know what I mean? But when you take the time and spend the money, because that's the important part, you're spending money on something, you really got to be prepared and have your shit together.
Yeah, definitely like isn't cheap for sure. I think that this is like the first time that it was like a, almost like a shock of like how expensive it is to play in a band. Because like up until, I mean, like anybody can play in a band, but then it's like if you're, like you said, you're trying to do it serious or take it to the next level and go into the studio and then whatever follows that as well. Because I'm like, okay, now you have this awesome record. What's the next step to do with it and to push it? Everything seems to cost money. So it's like you kind of just see all these, you know, you're constantly throwing money at it. But it feels worth it, I think, you know, and I think in comparison to the alternative, which would have been to record it in my apartment, which would have probably been fine. But I don't think that it would have been what it is now.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And there's no promises of when you've made a great record that anybody's even going to like it. That's the weird thing about the music business is like it either hits or it doesn't, or people you work at it and you guys play shows, obviously, and you tour, or you're going to be playing shows and touring and to support it. And that seems to be the way to do it now. And people appreciate that. But there's no promises. Like, you make this record, who knows if anybody's actually going to listen to it. And that's, you know, it takes a lot of guts to do shit like that, man. Like, it's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy because I think you send all the money on the record and then, like, I mean, like, nobody's going to really buy it. You know what I mean? Even if people, hopefully people like it, no one's probably going to buy it. Like, a lot, most people won't. Like, they'll listen to it on Spotify or whatever, which is great. All you really can ask for is for hopefully that people do like it and they listen to it. Because, like, when it comes down to, like, if money being worth something today, I don't even know if it is. And if it is, how much is it worth and who's making all those decisions?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't really.
Yeah. You know. Well, it's dark times, but they've been darker. I mean, like back in the Napster days and things like that. Like, I don't know how old you guys are, but living through that was like living through a small nightmare because the industry was doing shit. And then all of a sudden it was doing worse. And then like people couldn't put records out. And then if they did, it was all uploaded on Napster within the day. And, you know, at least there's some sort of grasp on it, even though, I mean, Spotify is not the best solution to all of this. Buying music off over the merch table, I think, is still the most effective way of getting your music across.
Yeah,
for touring. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember in the Napster days when people, because everybody was uploading CDs to Napster, and then they started putting like a ring around the CDs so that you couldn't rip them onto computers, but then people found out within like 24 hours you could just take like a Sharpie marker and put it around that ring and then it would allow you to rip it onto the computer. Yeah. So like it didn't last, obviously.
No.
Crazy.
No. There was all sorts of like people tried to watermark CDs. They tried to make it so like it just nothing ever worked. And I mean, honestly, the industry got caught with its pants down and it's still trying to catch up. It's still like trying to recover from horrible mistakes made. And what I think is a theory I have, but I think what's happened, nobody's going to stop pirating. People are always going to be stealing shit. It's always going to be stolen. But finding out how it's being stolen is as important as being able to trying to stop it. It's like trying to stop viruses. It's like, well, let's anticipate what people are going to do. So they'll make a problem and someone will solve it. And then they don't need to spend money on research and development to stop the problem. They just can witness. Yeah. And one day, I truly think one day it's going to be locked down. Like, we're going to have to like have our own ID identification cards just to get identified to be on the internet. So when we do stuff, it's going to be so tightly monitored. It's coming.
Right, that you will be held accountable for whatever you're stealing, right?
I hope so, because I'm sick and tired of horrible reviews, people like fucking trolls on YouTube being assholes. Those guys, that'll be gone. They'll be completely outlawed. They won't be around.
Trolls.
Trolls. Yeah, I mean, the internet troll is because it's living, you know, faceless. But one day we'll catch you, trolls. We will.
Coming for you.
Like that, there was a Kevin Smith movie where they found out all the trolls. Was it Silent Bob Strikes Back or Jane Silent Bob? They found out where everybody lives and they go right to their house. Yeah, that's going to happen.
I watched a film that was like about that last night. It was a Daniel Radcliffe movie called like Guns Akibo or something like that. Yeah. And he was like a troll online for this like online gambling thing, and they showed up at his house and they tracked him down. And anyway, rambling. Watch it. It was great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you've been in bands before. Like, is this sort of like how old are you guys? You guys look young. I don't know what young looks like anymore, but I think you guys look young.
Yeah, 29.
I'm 35,
29.
Ooh, he's old. He's old.
Yeah, Merle's the dad of the group.
Yeah. Gotta keep these young bucks in line.
Yeah, so when it's like the end of the show, you're like, now, I think you should be loading the van right now. I don't think you should be going out.
Puts us
to
bed.
I think I'm the worst of us in that regard.
I feel like he is, yeah.
Everyone's trying to rein me in. It's like, where did Merle go?
Like, Merle, wake the fuck up. We're 3 hours late.
Do you guys play in Vancouver primarily? Have you gone like any further? Have you gone east? Have you gone to Calgary and that sort of? Are you spreading out?
Yeah, soon. Yeah, we have a tour planned for last weekend of April, and then first 2 weeks of May. So,
It's been all Vancouver based so far for the past 2 years, but like tons of shows, probably more than we should be playing right now in the city, but tons of shows in Vancouver. But then, we just booked a tour with our buddies Dead End Drive-In, who are like been playing in Vancouver for a while. So we're hitting up the island and then kind of just doing BC, Alberta, Vancouver, Squamish, Kelowna, Calgary, Edmonton, all that stuff, and then coming back as well. So looking forward to that. It'll be fun to get out of the city and play some shows for people. So
yeah, it's amazing. Well, that's good because going past Calgary is hard. Like once you got to commit to like Regina at that point, you know, cause that's, which is 12 hours or whatever, 10 hours or something. That's a good loop to stay in.
Anymore, right?
Yeah. Like SNFU, you did that loop and have done that loop for 30 years and it pays well. You know what I mean? Like they just keep in that loop and it's a good loop to be in, you know. Prairies is a good place to be for punk rock for sure.
Yeah. I think that we want to come August, hopefully, maybe if we can, August or September, do across Canada though. Mm-hmm. And but then that comes, you know, jump into like where it's like Alberta and BC are great, and then you have all this dead space until you hit the East Coast. Like there's not a lot going on in the middle of there. Maybe there's Regina, but even if that's worth it, and then Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But like what else is in there?
You got
like,
Thunder Bay, you got Sault Ste. Marie, maybe Sudbury, North Bay maybe. Once you get into Southern Ontario, there's lots of places to play.
And you're good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost worth just to sort of deadhead it. To Ontario and just sort of, you know, pardon the French, but fuck Winnipeg. Nobody even looking at Winnipeg. Come on.
Right.
Be serious here.
Oh, Jets.
Sorry, Winnipeggers, but your city right now is probably as colder than that Day After Tomorrow movie right now. It's probably a million degrees.
They're like, fuck the high sides.
Yeah. You say that to all the bands I play in. But, you know, it's almost worth it. I mean, if you can get, like, Putzafest or something out in Montreal or something, it's worth coming out and playing some shows. And it's definitely, like, a lot of places to play in Southern Ontario. I guess it feels similar to, like, because when you're at the West Coast, there's a bunch of surrounding areas to play in, you know, as far as Kamloops. But Kamloops is about as far as Montreal from here, from where I live. So it's very, it's doable. You know what I mean? It's doable. But yeah, you're right. There is a lot of same scenario, same scenery going by between Calgary and, say, Thunder Bay. Or just before. Once you get into Ontario, it starts turning into more, like, less, you know, crazy. But you guys ever thought about going to Europe?
Hopefully in the future. Yeah. I mean, like, we definitely want to, like, spend the majority of our time now touring. Like,
yeah.
As much as we can. Like, we'll start with this small one and then do cross Canada. And then we're looking at, I mean, we're so close to Seattle and stuff. So dipping into the States and going that route, but even heading that way, or we just had some buddies that came back from Japan as well.
Yeah.
And so that it was like an amazing experience to go down and play there.
Yeah.
So
Europe's a place for you guys though. I think Europe would be a good place for you guys. Yeah. I think they like heavy music. They like aggressive music. They like punk rock. I think Europe would be a fantastic place, and you get to go on a plane,
make it over there.
Yeah,
no vans. Well, you get a van once you get over there, but you know, you've arrived when you tour in Europe in a Sprinter, then you actually truly have, like, you've made it. There's
that's it. Yeah. That's it doesn't get any better than that.
Next step is a tour bus, and then, you know, in between there is it's a big jump. Let's hear a song. I actually have some songs queued up.
Cool.
Let's hear, I can't hardly see it from here, but. Let's do the first song. Let's do Starved.
Yeah! been spending most my week alone with my thoughts, watching Rich Texture our film and rehearsing the plot. Most of my life has been this one big embarrassment, eating takeout food, watching the reruns.
So we were talking about smoking in the van. So, so do you guys have a rule, or do you have a, first of all, you have a van? You got a van, right? You must have.
We're renting a van for this tour. Yeah. So there's like this guy that plays in like a couple tour bands out in Vancouver, and I got his connect from some other bands that we played with. Yeah. And he just like rents out the vans and insures them for the bands. And it's really reasonably priced too. And you don't get charged by the mileage either.
Wow.
So we're going to rent that for this tour. And then I would say we'll get our own for the Cross Canada.
That's pretty cool. What's the name of this company? Because that's something that doesn't really exist out here anymore.
Super cool. I'd have to pull up his name. I like just started talking to this guy like a few weeks ago. But I can find it for you. But yeah, super cool. I'd never heard of anything like this before either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there used to be a guy, the guy who played in TSOL, he had a thing called Roach's Coaches in LA.
Okay, yeah.
And he would rent these RVs and they would just get trashed. Like I went on tour with Good Riddance doing sound and we fucking destroyed this thing. It was crazy. Like it was like a brand new, like whatever those Toa or whatever those brand new RVs were. And he renovated the back and put bunks in it, which is a bad idea because the wheels sort of go halfway up and the bunks right. are in the back. And anytime you hit a bump, it's like fucking you're hitting the roof anytime you hit a bump, but
they're not, it's what he does it, I guess.
Yeah. And like RVs aren't supposed to be they're supposed to have like little old ladies and men like sitting in the thing and sort of daintily opening cupboards, not like grabbing it and then hitting a bump and then have the thing in your hand. Like, we destroyed this thing. We wrecked it. And with, like, the table came off because we were playing Uno too hard. And like, we just, you know, and it was just like this thing. And we gave it back. And I felt kind of bad because we were sort of like one of the first bands to take his, his RVs out. But it's I commend, like, man, if that guy can do that, that's pretty cool, because I should probably get his name, because I'm coming back out that way again in June, and at least we can.
Yeah, when I find it, I'll send it your way.
Yeah, because, for sure.
Yeah, he seems like a really nice guy, and like I said, it's like really reasonably priced, and I never knew that was an option, because when we were originally just looking at renting a van from a rental company, and I was like, way too expensive.
Yeah.
Like, we might as well buy one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the price of looking for a brand new van, we were looking at something for about $3,000, and then we looked at renting, and it ended up being like $2,000 for a rental.
Yeah,
for 2 weeks. It's like, yeah, there's no point in renting for 2 weeks. And then that was about a month later. That's when we heard about this service out here that this guy's providing.
Yeah. If I can give any advice to the touring band, never get like the airport shuttle or short bus. Never.
Right. Yeah.
Not just anytime. Never. Never get that thing.
Gas wise?
What's that?
Gas wise?
It's just, no, they've been driven like every day for 20 years. They have like, they've gone around, the odometer's gone around like 3 times. They're just beat up. I had an air, like a short bus that I bought thinking, oh, this would be the best. Thing broke every time I drove it. Like on average, it broke every time. And then I took the weaker vans out to like Quebec and back, and we almost missed some pretty crazy shows because of this piece of shit van, like flats, fuel problems, everything was wrong with it. And it finally blew up, and it was like my little baby. And I, like, my wife at the time, my wife now still, it could have been my wife at the time, because she was like, you got to get rid of this thing. This thing is killing you. Like, it's so expensive. Right, yeah. Ridiculous. Just get a van, put a bunk in the back. Call it a day. Tow a trailer. Get a trailer too, or get an RV, or I don't know. RVs are a bit funky.
Yeah, I mean, RV sounds cool, but yeah, I mean, RV that runs on propane. What about that?
They have those. Right? I've seen those things. They have them in Europe. They're like little scaled down ones. They're pretty awesome because, you know, if you got to sleep somewhere, you might as well have something that's yours, you know. And whoever buys it can go camping.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, you guys, see you later.
You guys mind pitching a tent, you know, out front?
With your dick.
Exactly. Well, that's amazing. Like I was, the reason I do the show is to meet bands that just still do it, you know? And, you know, part of me thinks this is amazing. Like, bands still do it. The other part of me is like, well, why? Why do bands still do it? Like, you know, is it, you know, and that is a big question. Like, do you guys ever figure out, like, oh, you know what? Is this, it's obviously worth it because you're still doing it, right?
Yeah. For me personally, I think, I mean, this record is like, I feel like the best thing I've ever worked on. And, that, you know, makes me stoked. And I think that, just like the idea of like the possibility of like leaving a record in this punk scene that maybe people will still listen to like 10 years from now, you know, and it doesn't even have to be anything. You don't have to even be anything, but like, there's like some smaller bands that like that I grew up listening to, you know, that like, they didn't blow up or become these huge bands, but like their albums are like staples, and like people will still always listen to them, you know? And like, maybe just to be a part of that legacy in some way where it's like, you don't even have to be a big name, but like, if people are still listening to that record 10 years from now, like, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember in the 90s, there was a big difference between the West Coast punk rock and the East Coast punk rock. And it seems to be almost like, feels like it's leveling out now. Like, hardcore music seems to, it's universal, you know. You know, because West had like, you know, Diglabortions, SNFU, No Means No. Like, all those bands were kind of like, they were different. You know, something about being so far away from Toronto or being so far from Montreal had their own thing, you know. Do you hear it sort of, is there a sort of a Vancouver sound?
I wouldn't say so necessarily. It seems like all the bands that we've played with, everyone has kind of their own brand. and their own style. We all seem to fit really well together within our scene, and we're all trying to help each other out as much as possible. I can't really say for certain what other scenes have going on, but it does seem like just with, again, the advent of Spotify and streaming and being able to listen to whoever you want from wherever in the world they're from, that melding of styles has really come along. So it seems like when any new artist, I know I've had friends tell me and tell us when they listen to the new record that they're naming off 5 or 6 different bands, and at least 3 of them were just like, yeah, we don't know who they fucking are. But they just name all these bands and they're just like, this is who you sound like. Do you listen to them? Like, no, but cool. Thanks for like giving a name drop.
Yeah, it's been cool. And I think that like, I don't know, where are you based out of?
I'm just outside of Toronto. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like, and I feel like that it kind of is similar. But you listen to like bands that are coming out of Toronto that I like adore, like the Flatliners and bands like Pup, you know? But although like when I was like with Pup, like Morbid stuff came out last year and that was like my favorite album of the year and like listened to it on repeat. But then I listened to a band like Pup and I feel like nobody really sounds like Pup at all. Yeah. So I'm like, I feel like that's a super unique sound that they have. But then like, you know, like, I don't know, like the Flatliner sound is over there. I feel like that you're getting some of that over here as well, you know?
Yeah.
But Toronto seems like it's like kind of still ruling the punk rock scene for Canada from at least from afar. That's how I feel.
Yeah, but to me, it seems like parts of the United States dictate over all of us, certain types of genres and flavors of punk rock. We have our regions and our sound. And I think more importantly, though, the scene is more important than the actual music style. Because, you know, Vancouver's always had a pretty cool scene, very solid. Inherently, people from Vancouver are a little bit more laid back, a little bit less, you know, into, I don't know, the industry of it all. Right. Torontonians are pretty intense people about things. And I think they still are. And as I'm getting older, I don't notice it as much. But I do remember, like, being a 20-year-old Torontonian moving to Winnipeg to join a band and being kind of interested and excited about making this band. And everybody like in Winnipeg is like, hey, chill out, man. Like, you know what I mean? That was like, we'll get there. You know what I mean? And I don't know what's right or wrong anymore. I didn't know then. I still kind of don't. I mean, like, if you try too hard, it turns into something. If you don't try hard enough, it turns into nothing. You know, so, right. You know, how do you guys surf that type of social media, getting your name out? Like, how do you guys draw a line? Like, is the line been even reached the line yet?
I don't know where the line is.
Yeah, I don't think we've even come close to it because we're still trying to figure this all out on our end, especially when it comes to the social media game. I'm terrible at it. These guys make up the slack that I'm putting in. But there's definitely a learning curve when it comes to marketing ourselves in today's age for music and being a new band.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it, I guess, it helps with it being a DIY all the time with that kind of thing where we don't have like a street team. We are the street team.
Yeah.
Deal, right?
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, I don't know. Like he said, the marketing side of it now, I mean, like everything is it's Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. And I mean, we have had a little bit of help on that aspect. Cause like, it's like you put all this money into a record and then, you know, you don't want it to just bounce around your friends.
Yeah.
That are going to tell you it's good, even if it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, you want it to like, at least, you know, for other people to hear it. So, and we have had a little bit of help from Melanie, who we've been working with, Melanie K as a PR.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like the next step that we decided that maybe we should take because it's like, okay, well, we've spent the money on their record and we have this great product or what we think is a great product. And, you know, maybe we should get some help trying to push it instead of us, you know, just trying to handle it ourselves. Cause like it is, you know, I don't know. It's like you send emails out to these websites and you email all these people and you're like, hey, can you review the record and check out the record? And then nobody fucking emails you back.
Yeah.
And then, and then it's like, you know, and then you get a PR that they know her email and then she sends it. And then they're like, okay, they're going to answer that. So, I mean, it sucks cause you have to spend the money, but it seems to be maybe the only alternative if you're really trying to push your band to the whatever the next step maybe.
Oh, totally. And, you know, today, I don't envy today's musician because you have to be kind of like be good at networking. You have to be good at writing music. You have to sort of wear a lot of hats. And it's really tricky to know what hat to wear, you know? And being self-managed is a tricky one because I was there and it's tough to negotiate terms that are fair for you as a band or fair for you as a person or fair for the person you're working for. That's what, you know, and when you say you're DIY, that's what managers do. They fight for you and they walk in front of buses for you. And nobody can afford a manager anymore. So everybody has to turn into this super kind of musician slash manager slash promoter, promo person. It's really hard to do, man. And, you know, to me, the brightest wins that one, you know.
Yeah.
And because there's a lot of bands out there who write great songs, but they don't know how to put two words together. That's a tricky one too, right? Because where does that person going to sit in all of this now that they have to, you know,
shop it around? Because yeah, that's the thing. It's like it does become a business. It's like, even if you don't want it to, like if you, I feel like you write a good record and you, if you want your band to be, I mean, I feel like using the word successful is weird because I don't really know how, like
there's very different versions of success.
But if you, you know, if you want to take your band seriously, at least, you know, I don't know. It's a, like you said, it's like all the multiple hats that you have to wear, and it's not just playing in a band. It's being a it's being a business person, and it's being able to talk to people and sell yourself, and also being a social media expert.
Yeah, and nobody's all those people. You know what I mean? And you know, so if you can kind of do everything a little bit good, you know, and you write songs better than you can have conversations. Nobody said that's you know what I mean? Like nobody, you know, nobody said you had to do that, you know what I mean? Because you guys write good music, it's gonna get out there. You're just sort of head, you know, you're giving yourself more of a chance. And you know, I guess the publicist is now going to be is going to be taking over the world, because record labels don't really know what's going on, but publicists know different the people that want to listen to your music, or the people that want to get to the people who want to listen to your music. It's a tough one to do, you know what I mean? Like, and so they're the ones that are going to win all of this. You know, Melanie Kay is she's going to have gold earrings. We're talking about her. Melanie, we're talking about you right now. Gold earrings and a tiara. I know. Right? I've known Melanie for many years. She's a great lady.
Awesome. Yeah, no, she's been great. It's been really awesome working with her. And yeah, I mean, I think it's that, like working with PRs and then, you know, looking to get distribution help, I think, in printing. Next thing, and then like kind of, you know, even skipping out on that record label unless it's the right, I guess, deal, and if that exists then that exists. But I mean, I don't think it needs to exist, at least not right off the bat. Where, you know, like you're working with someone to get your music out there, and you're working with someone to help print it and get physical copies and shop that online, and then kind of cut out some of the middle, you know, that maybe necessary, at least at this stage, maybe isn't necessary.
What's your thoughts on vinyl?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Pro vinyl.
I
think that I don't think we'll print CDs for
No, you don't need to do that.
No. Definitely do vinyls. I think that people buy vinyls even when they don't own record players. I think people go to shows and they see vinyls and they like, it's like a piece of art, right? And they're like, I don't even own a record player, but this looks awesome and I'm going to buy it and hang it on my wall.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so I think it's cool that people are buying physical music again and not just streaming it on Spotify.
Oh, totally. Vinyl is a weird one with me because I do own a record player and I own a lot of records, but I've had this conversation a few times with people, and it's probably gonna sound like a broken record. See what I did there? Anyways, what I feel is when I have my earbuds in and I'm walking with my phone in the woods, and I'm listening to my favorite band, it's really hard to cart along the record player. You know, it's a whole different experience, right? It's a whole different.
And like, you know.
Yeah. So I think there's a time and a place for everything. But records are something like when they do switch all the lights off, those things are going to be worth their weight in gold, because you'll still be able to play it. You just put a needle on it and you can make it amplified, and you can still listen to music and art. And, a little tidbit of vinyl trivia is that NASA sent a probe out to space, like in the 60s, basically for any sort of foreign any alien life to find, and in there are records. So so they'll be like looking at this thing going, they won't be speaking English. It'll be like bleep, blop, blop, bleep. And that'll mean like, what the fuck is this? What do I do? And they'll see the there's notches and they'll be able to hear.
And they'll probably just be able to stick out their finger and like spin it on their finger.
Yeah.
And play it.
Yeah. And they'll go, these earthlings sound pretty fucking stupid, man. Cause man, my MP3 player, I got the, you know, whatever. But
I wonder what they sent up there. I mean, I guess you said it was the '60s when they
In the '60s. They sent it out and it's way beyond the and it'll run into something and something will find it. Mm-hmm. And it'll be records. It'll be records. It won't be CDs. That's cool. It won't be anything, but it'll be
make my own version of that.
Yeah.
Consent.
Let's hear another song. What do you guys want to hear? I got the whole record.
We did the first one. We could do the last one. The song 8, Disaster Piece.
Okay, here comes.
Bastard!
you know, you guys have done a really good record. It sounds great. And I like meeting new bands that, well, not new bands. I like meeting bands that sort of know, get it. They get the part where it's like, this is what we got to do. We got to play shows. We got to promote ourselves. We have to make it known who we are. We don't get enough of that. You know what I mean? I do a podcast every week and I meet people and some people are kind of like, meh, you know, out of necessity, they have to do interviews, you know? So, you know, thanks for doing that. I appreciate you guys. And whenever you come to Toronto, whatever, let me know. We could find your show somewhere.
Cool. Yeah, no, thanks for having us. We're obviously happy to do it. And, yeah, the more the merrier. And we'll definitely be out there soon. And, yeah, hopefully we can link up.
And that was Shane Elwood and Dylan Murley from The High Sides talking about their new album, Some Pretty Dark Thoughts, from Vancouver. A while ago now, it was almost a month ago when we did this episode, but they were supposed to be playing some shows and we had this whole pandemic thing that screwed all that up. So this episode, unfortunately, we got a little bit of the back burner just to make sure that everything else was coming out at the right time. So Shane and Dylan, thank you so much for doing this episode. What can I say? I'm not going to ramble on like I did at the start of this thing because it is not worth it doing it twice. But if you want to help the show out, go shop on Amazon. Go to applelock.ca/Amazon or applelock.ca/US Amazon. Shop and support the show. Costs you no extra money and all that good stuff. Buy all your vibrators from there. And support my work on Patreon by going to patreon.com/applelock. And, you know, like the show on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. I don't know what to say. That was it. That was the episode. Who's coming up next week? I can't tell you, but I will say that we'll be back next week because I think I'm going to be starting to try to get a live show together, which will be probably me and my buddy Kyle shooting shit live and trying to entertain you folks. I'm sitting inside during the global pandemic. Pandemic. It's going to be the name of my new band, Pandemic. Or something else, like Pandermic or something. So like I'm pandering to people because I seem to do that a lot. So thanks for listening to this episode, everybody. We will see you next week. Adios. Bye-bye. Farewell. Go watch the new Ozarks. Go watch Tiger King. And enjoy. Wash your fucking hands.